If we can remember back all the way from 3 weeks ago, we're holding a mitzvah Kuf Pei Ches 188. Shiloli his adin bachas mikol ha'arayos. This is one of the mitzvah which states that not only are we not allowed to have relations with those who are considered arayos, forbidden sexual relationships, but we're not even allowed to behave in an intimate manner with them. We pointed out that d'oraisa, it seems to be that the only thing that is prohibited is chibuk v'nishuk, which is hugging and kissing, or in specifically perhaps in a manner that suggests that one will be that it could be leading to intercourse with this person. And then there are many things which are prohibited. Derabanan, we said maybe that stam hugging and kissing, even not in obviously sexual manner, might be included in the derabanan prohibition, as well as and according to some minority opinions, maybe deraisa, but that's not the simple understanding.
Would that be like one's mother?
Mother, well, close relatives that one is allowed to touch. Oh, okay. We'll get to in a second. And this is what's colloquially called shomer negia, that we're not allowed to touch members of the opposite gender to whom we are not married, with the exception of, again, these are very close relatives like mother, etc., where that one is allowed to touch, or father for a girl. But it's not shomer negia. Like we said, technically, it's probably mutter to tap someone on the shoulder to get their attention or something along those lines. It really means that you're not allowed to touch them in any sort of manner that suggests closeness.
But, you know,
some people include shaking hands, others don't, and that, yeah.
That's very interesting. It makes sense, but I think in fact on the ground is that if there was some gentleman from Breuer's and I tapped him on the shoulder to get his attention, he'd faint. You know.
Right. That's why I said last time that this tapping someone on the shoulder would not... Again, now it's because it's colloquially called shomer negia,
yeah.
So we think of it as that men, males and females are not allowed to touch each other. But it's an oversimplification because, again, it's also technically only applies to arroyos, which means, again, the reason that single men and women are not allowed to touch each other is because that the woman is considered a nida because she hasn't been to the mikvah. But technically speaking, one could make the argument that if a single woman has gone to the mikvah and she has lost her status of nida, so then there is no prohibition. She's not an erva.
But how do you
know? Therefore,
know?
There's no... She would have, obviously, she'd have to tell you. So she would have to... You would technically be allowed to touch her, at least in a manner that would not... cause you inappropriate thoughts, etc. Again, it's hard to imagine a case
when a single girl has gone up to some guy and said, I've just been to the mikvah, then, you know, it's appropriate.
Right. Already,
I think you have a very big problem.
That's true, but that's why people joke that technically at a wedding you can go up and hug the kala at the reception. Because that's the only time where there's a woman who's not yet married.
And
she's not a nida. So obviously this would not be...
I don't think she's not. I mean, if you're made sure after...
But you have actually... You don't really know.
It could be a chupas nida.
Right, it could be a chupas nida. But assuming the majority of cases are not a chupas nida, so then people make that joke. But obviously, if you touch her in a sexual manner, it would be a problem of causing yourself to have inappropriate thoughts. But technically speaking, certainly to tap her on the shoulder or something, technically... I mean, we don't want to actually do it. It would not technically be a prohibition because she's not an erva. But in ordinary circumstances, that's the reason for shomer negia. It's basically based on the prohibition of nida, or if regarding, for example, other relatives, then we're a married woman, for example, even if she's not a nida, so she's an erva because she's a married woman. So it's either a nida or it's not, or because she's forbidden to you for another reason.
But the chakokos, for example, that exist between a husband and a wife when you're in the she's a nida,
right.
Don't exist. You know, between some, you know, like another man, for example, you know, you don't have to go ahead. You know, you can take like,
right.
You know,
so
if she makes change, you can do it faster.
Right. Right. There is a minority. There is a very minority opinion that you should keep all the harchakos with any married woman, but that's very much not accepted. That we assume that the things that are specifically between a man and his wife during.
A lot of stores, I've had people put the dollar bill down.
Oh yeah.
I used to be on West Side Judaica, but then I guess they got used to the West Side or something because they don't do that anymore. But.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, the West Side Judaica doesn't
Well, now they don't run the cash
register. Oh yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I mean, when they started there, certainly the guys just put the money down. I was always around.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, sure.
The Lower East Side, they always did.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's not technically us, or they're just making their own xera, so to speak, that they shouldn't accidentally touch you when.
Community standard.
They're all day long, and it's not. I mean.
It's not technically also, that's for sure. That you're not, you're allowed to eat, again, like I said last time, you're allowed to eat at the same table without a hecker in between you. Again, I don't recommend...
Pass the salt.
Right, I don't recommend romantic candlelit dinner, just you two at the same table with another man's wife. But that would be, technically speaking, if that would not, you wouldn't need all these technical things that exist between a man and woman during the time, man and wife, during the time that she's a nida. So the Sefer Chinuch pointed out, if we go down to Medinei HaMitzvah, so this is where we left off before, which is that we have an interesting exception between a husband and wife during the Nida period. We have a couple exceptions. One is that the husband is allowed to stare at his wife's uncovered parts of her body, like her face or her hand or something, even in order to derive pleasure, according to most opinions, during the time that she's in Nida, where that is not permissible with other arayos. But it says, the Sefer Chinuch ends off this, at least this paragraph in my edition, V'davka b'mokom megula sheba, hitir listakel b'odanida, v'abalo b'mechusa. You're not allowed to stare at a place that is covered. So, for example, like her belly or something, which is a place which is normally covered, you're not allowed to stare at that during the time that she's anida, because k'deishal yilbishenu yetzer hara, because that's the other way, that if you're staring at a place that's uncovered in order to derive pleasure, so there's more of a check on that. That's less erotic, so you'll think, okay, I'm allowed to be with her in just a few days, so you're not going to be extra tempted right now. But if it's a place that's normally covered, that's considered to be extra erotic. So even though she'll be permitted to in a few days, that might cause you to be closer to sinning than looking at the uncovered places. And we pointed out that this is seemingly, there is a yeshivish practice, by the way, that I've heard that some people do. I don't know how prevalent it is even in the yeshivish community, which is that the wife stays dressed in front of her husband. Anytime her husband could potentially see her, the wife stays dressed the same as she would go outside. So she sleeps she wears a long nightgown to bed, she sleeps in a tichel, she doesn't allow her husband even to glance at any parts of her body that are normally covered when she walks outside on the street. But the simple understanding is that that's not correct. Really, the husband glancing at any part of her body during Nida is not a problem. If they're like I said, if they're getting dressed or something, so some part of her body is uncovered and he happens to see it, that's not a big deal. He's just not allowed to stare at it. And for that reason, you know, we don't recommend, even in the modern Orthodox community, so to speak, we certainly recommend that during Nida, that a woman should always try to be as much as possible dressed in front of her husband the same as she would be walking around the house, that she shouldn't go with, bare minimum clothes. Again, we pointed out last time there's other issues involved in walking around in naked status, just thumb around the house. But that aside for a second, so she shouldn't walk, she should stay dressed as much as possible in front of her husband the same way she would be in front of her house. So let's say if she wears, she doesn't cover her hair in her house, so she doesn't have to cover her hair at all in front of her husband or Anita. She doesn't have to, maybe if she wears shorter skirts or even shorts or something during Anita, so it would still be okay to continue wearing that in front of her husband during the Nida period, if that's a manner that she normally hangs around the house during her Tara period as well. And that's the accepted psak in at least in our communities. The Amru Zichronim Livracha continues to say for Achinuch, Gamkein, whoa, we were going to get to the hot topic. She'osor lehistakel afilu besaira shel isha asuralo, that one is not allowed to gaze not only at the flesh of a woman to whom he is forbidden, but even at her hair. Which is interesting, because the way the Sefer Chinuch presents it over here, even at her hair, nowadays, you know, there's this whole mystique about covering the hair, that it really is the most erotic part of the body, and therefore has to be shielded from everyone's eyes but the husband. But it's not the impression you get over here. You get the impression over here, and you get from the Rambam as well, which he's sort of paraphrasing over here, is that the hair is less erotic, and even the hair that you're not allowed to look at, as opposed to flesh of the body, which we'll get to more in a second. The afilu, again, another afilu, even something less erotic than actually looking at her flesh. The afilu lishmoa kola lekavana shehane ba'asar, to listen to her voice in order to derive pleasure from her voice, of a woman not allowed to, who does zenerva, you're not allowed to do.
Speaking or singing.
Excellent question.
Reading the first draft of her speech.
So the question is, Charlie makes an excellent point over here, which is the Sefer Chinuch makes no mention of anything involving Singing. Okay, so we'll get to this one by one. First we'll talk about the hair, then we'll talk about the voice. So there are two halachos regarding a woman covering her hair. One is found in Maseches Brachos in the Gemara, and one is found in the Mishnah in Maseches Ksubos. The Mishnah, well, let's reverse the order for a second. The Mishnah Maseches Ksubos states that there are several reasons where that a woman could be divorced without paying her ksuba, because she's considered to have forfeited. And it's really the reason that the ksuba was established is that the husband should have to pay the wife some sort of alimony when they get divorced. So he shouldn't be just men shouldn't go around divorcing their wives for no reason, and just because they feel like it, they should have a check and balance involved, so they have to pay the ksuba. But if a woman, we want to say to the man, go ahead, divorce your wife. She's not a good wife. Go ahead. So therefore, the ksuba is forfeited, so he can divorce her without the payment of the ksuba. The Mishnah there lists two different types of reasons that would be the case. One is Overis al Das Moshe. One is Overis al Das Yehudis. One is that she does things, she feeds him non-kosher food, or she doesn't go to the mikvah, so of course she should be divorced without paying her ksuba. But not only that, but if she fails to adhere to the standards that the Jewish women have accepted upon themselves, such as Yotza Verosha Paruah, if she goes outside without covering her hair, her head. Again, Mrs. Hirsch always asks about a woman who has no hair if she still has to cover her head. And the answer is yes. The answer is yes. But if she goes outside without covering her hair or her head, then she also forfeits her ksuba because that is considered to be pritzos, a breach in the fence of the modesty of Jewish women, and therefore that's unacceptable. So the Gemara asks a question on that Mishnah. The Gemara says, Rosha Parua De'oraisa, he says, how could you say that woman uncovering her hair is simply a violation of the standards of modesty of Jewish women? There is a source for it in the very Bible itself, which is the fact that when the sota, the woman suspected of adultery, was taken to the Beis HaMikdash, one of the things that was done to her is that the Kohen ripped off her head covering in order to disgrace her. So you see that it's disgrace for...
let down her hair.
Both, yeah, actually, yeah. That's the source, by the way, for the Haredi practice, that even single women don't go with loose hair, that they wear braids. That's also derived from that. So far with the cover, they don't go, but again, that's very questionable. That's a Shita of the Magen Avraham, but it's very questionable. I'm not going to go into it right now. But in any event, since there is a biblical source for it, the Gemara wants to know how the Mishnah could call it simply Das Yehudis, the Minag of Jewish women. So whether the Gemara means literally that it's a biblical commandment, it's not one of the 613 mitzvahs, so there's a source for it in the Bible, but exactly the status of it, whether it's really a mitzvah d'oraisa, is somewhat subject to debate amongst the poskim, but in any event, everybody agrees that that's not subject to change in different places and times, because there the Gemara clearly states that there's a biblical source for it and should not be subject to simply the modesty standards of the time and place, and it's on a higher level than what you might call the other things of Das Yehudis, which are again, you're not going to say they're only the Rabbanan, like going out with the priestess way of showing, for example, that she weaves in public and people are going to stare at her her arms or her body through her sleeves, a different sheet is about that. But there's no explicit biblical source for that. It's also, we assume, is not certainly not subject to change. It's not to do that. But in any event, the Gemara clearly indicates that it's on a higher level than the Mishnah seems to indicate on a face value. And the Gemara answer, and it's an absolute rule with a source in the Bible. So, the Gemara answers this question by saying as follows. That, de'oraisa, a woman is allowed to wear something called a kalta, which is translated by different Rishonim either as a basket, and the reason that, and I'm sorry, folks, or as a kerchief. So the Gemara says that is allowed on a d'oraisa level, but Das Yehudis, the minhag of Jewish women, even that's prohibited. So the question is, what's wrong with a basket or a kerchief if it sits on your head and covers your hair? What's the big deal? So according to one sheet in the Rishonim, it's found, I believe, in the name of Rashi Madura Kama in the Shita Mikubetzes, and also Rabbeinu Yehonasan, which is that it seems to indicate that the basket is of a loose weave. So you could see her hair through the weave of the basket, and that's not acceptable. That on d'oraisa, that's acceptable because she does have at least the kol shehu, a minimal type of covering on her head, which is the basic d'oraisa requirement. Which and nevertheless, according to the minhag of Benos Yisrael, according to Das Yehudis, she has to wear something more substantial, a real garment that completely covers her head. According to other Rishonim, the reason is that a basket doesn't show that she's covering her hair. A basket just means she could happen to want to carry a basket on her head. Whereas that's Pritz's thing, because it doesn't clearly indicate that she's married. It doesn't clearly indicate that she wants to cover her hair. So therefore, those Rishonim require, she has to wear some sort of garment on her head. It just can't be a basket. According to the opinion that Kalta means a kerchief, and even that's no good, which is the opinion of the Rambam. So what the Rambam means is that Deraisa, she has to cover her hair possibly completely, that's even a Deraisa requirement. But the Rabbanan, she has to wear something even more substantial than just the basic kerchief, meaning, according to the Rambam, that if the minag in her place is that she wears like a whole shawl covering her head and her shoulders like that, so that would even fall under the category de Rabbanan, or the category of Das Yehudis, that the minag of Jewish women. But according to the Rambam, this actually is subject to the different places and times, so that there's no reason nowadays that one would have to wear anything more than a kerchief. That a kerchief, according to the Rambam nowadays, would be completely sufficient. And at least the higher level of Das Yehudis does seem to be subject to the place and time. Yeah?
Did the Rambam actually say that the Jewish women have to wear veils? Or is that the...
No, this is what you're thinking of this, that it redid. What he calls the higher level of covering, the more substantial covering than just a kerchief, is he calls a redid, which is like a shawl, but it doesn't cover her face.
Okay.
It covers
her... So it wasn't the standard of the non-Jewish community was such that, you know,
The Rambam says that if the minag of the Jewish people in that place, maybe it doesn't matter whether it's under the influence of the Arabs or not, that if the minag of the Jewish women in that place is that they don't go outside unless they wear a shawl, even if they're wearing a kerchief that completely covers their hair, then that's absolutely halachically required. But
you don't want to be less...
It's not a matter of less frum. The community has the right to dictate certain standards. That's something that we've sort of... Nowadays, we don't have it anymore, that we have real Jewish communities. In the olden days, every town was its own community and could dictate its own minhagim and standards. Nowadays, since we have a sort of melting pot here in America of Jews from all different places, and there are no set communal minhagim, so we have a breakdown in the system, which is somewhat unfortunate.
But if the world arrives...
Right, so Jewish women nowadays have to maintain a higher standard than that was accepted in the secular culture. That's no question. But in any event, there is this sort of breakdown of communum and hugim that the Rambam is talking about. So nowadays, every person says, well, my rabbi says, I can do this. And, you know, they'll, walk at the Royers dressed in a miniskirt because the rabbi said that they can do it, which is not really appropriate. Even though it's not really a community minhag in the sense that all of Washingtonites, all of a locality is that way, that is a community with very set standards. So it's not appropriate to violate them, yeah? If you go into their area.
I guess it's on tape, maybe. The thing is, my rabbi says I can do this or that or the other. But you know, like in the summertime, like if I'm going to go to Breuer's, I make sure I'm wearing stockings and shoes that tie and not going without stockings and open-toed sandals.
But that's
or
exactly
loafers or something.
Sandals.
But that's exactly right.
Because I have
But that's right, Frieda. What's the problem?
No, that's what I mean. I mean, I have thought this for years. And it's within packaging. I helped check the A-roof. And I'm totally fine with the A-roof. But, you know, in the summertime it gets hot. I'm walking down Bennett Avenue. I'll wait till I get to Fort Washington Avenue to take off my jacket.
Okay, that's also very nice. That's also a problem.
Have a right to take off my jacket. I have a right to carry safer down, whatever it is. But, you know...
The street is not their domain.
No, you know what I mean?
Exactly. They Fine. So there are some people who say something very curious, that they say, the Rambam, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Lashon of the Rambam, the Rambam says that a kerchief is not enough. You need a shawl. You need a redid. So you see that the Rambam holds that women need to have two head coverings, that they need to wear a kerchief and a hat on top, or they need to have a hairnet and a hat on top. That's ridiculous. There has to be a qualitative difference between the two coverings for this to even make sense. You just have two kerchiefs, one on top of each other. That's ridiculous. But the whole thing is wrong.
Well, men can't daven without two head coverings.
Well, that's also wrong. Okay, that's also a misconception. But But that's exactly wrong. It's exactly because it's the same idea that people were wearing yarmulkes and they had hats on top, so you need two coverings. That's not correct either. The reason you need a hat for davening, according to some opinions, is that it's a more substantial, a more michubad, a more honorable, formal type of head covering than just the yarmulke. Mm-hmm.
So that's why you need a hat for that. If you have a hat on without a yarmulke underneath, of course that's perfectly fine. The same thing here, that in this type of area, again, nowadays the whole thing is wrong because even the Rambam says that you don't need a redid if that's not the minhag in the place. But even in a place where that were the case, you wouldn't need two kerchief under a redid. Just a redid would be fine. Or let's say some contemporary example, just like we just talked about the men, that if there were a minhag in the community that a woman didn't just wear a tichel, but she wore a hat. A more formal type of covering. So you wouldn't have to wear a tichel under the hat, you just wear the hat. And in the house, you can wear a tichel, of course. All these rules only apply when you go out to the street, but I mean, the whole thing, so there are some women I've heard of in Israel, they wear a like a cap on their heads to cover their hair, then they wear the sheitel on top of that. Because they think there are two reasons for this. One is that they wear the double covering, quote unquote, yeah. that the quote unquote Rambam requires, which is completely not correct. And two, they want to be choshesh that according to the opinions that you're not allowed to wear a sheitel, that you have to wear an actual garment type of covering. So what they do is they're really covering their hair with a garment. Then when the sheitel sits on top of the cap, that's just an adornment to their heads. They're not covering their hair with something that looks like hair. The whole thing is so ridiculous. Anyway, so the sheitel issue is that's a misunderstanding of the sheitel issue, in my opinion. All these opinions, sheitel is usur, sheitel is mutter, going into tshuvas back and forth, trying to prove from the Gemara one way or the other. It's also not correct. The whole approach is not correct, in my opinion, because what this means is that you're going with the opinion of the Rambam, that the Rambam says that you cover your hair is the basic standard, but the type of covering that is allowed is subject to communal standards. So therefore, if the minhag, again, I think that if you ask most rabbis nowadays, and they said, is it the ideal state of the Jewish people that married women are going with sheitels, I think they would probably say no, that ideally, obviously, there would be a higher level of tznius and better if they would go with only tichels and hats and things like that. But the question is, halachically, according to the Ikar Adin, now that it's accepted in most communities for women to wear a sheitel, then that's okay. Because nowadays hair, although women in the surrounding culture, they go with uncovered heads, the non-Jewish women, and of course not married Jewish women. Therefore, seeing hair per se does not cause men to have improper thoughts. It's not, they don't think twice about it. So therefore, all you're left with is the technical halacha that a woman has to cover her hair. And therefore, if the minhag is to cover with a sheitel, then that's acceptable. But with a caveat, like Rabbi Willig says, I agree to this, that I have to be able to tell it's a sheitel. If you wear a sheitel, that's so fantastic that if you're looking at it, you can't even see that there's like a cap here that's not attached to her head. Or if it's long and voluptuous and alluring, then that's also for a different reason. You don't even get hair covering, not hair covering. That's pretzis completely. To look as much as possible as if you're not covering your hair. Or some women, this sentence I will edit out, that's very becoming very common in more left-wing modern Orthodox community, is to wear something called a window sheitel, which is where a woman takes a lock of her natural hair out of the front of the sheitel and combs it back into the sheitel, so you mamish look, the sheitel blends into her hair. You cannot tell at all that she's wearing any false hair. In my opinion, that's completely usur and should not. People don't realize it. They don't.
A statement.
Wait a second. But her hair is exposed.
A one lock of hair. But they think that that's if they calculate it, so maybe it's less than a tefach.
It's making a statement. Yeah.
It's not right. It's simply not right.
What's the point of it if it blends in? I mean, even from the appearance sake, how can you tell?
You can't tell the difference. That's the point.
Meaning, most of the hair that you see on the back of her head is sheitel hair.
So what is the statement?
But there's one lock on top that's combed out at the front and goes back.
What's the statement that she's making?
She doesn't want to cover her hair. That she wants to look as natural as possible. Well, that has a little real hair in front, and then that's at least you can tell where the sheitel starts,
okay.
You have some sort of again, whether that's allowed or not.
From this aesthetic standpoint, if you have a sheitel which obviously matches your real hair,
right?
Why bother having the real hair there altogether?
Because it looks more natural. You can't tell
because
in a real sheitel. There's a harsh hairline in front that you can tell is not attached to your head. I think that, in my opinion, if you're going to do the false hair approach as being an acceptable hair covering, which I think is a legitimate halachic argument in today's day and age, I think that the only way to go really is a full sheitel and anything else. And again, not a long voluptuous one is really, really, really pushing the boundary to put it mildly.
Like
Yeah, that's a problem. It's a problem. Again, if we could get a conference of all the Jewish women and all the rabbis in the world, and we could say, "All for now, now on, we're not going to wear shaitels anymore," I think that would be a better state for the Jewish people. But I don't think that. Again, as it stands now, al pi halacha, I don't think it's. I don't think it's forbidden.
This battle has been going on for like 1,000 years.
Right. So I think that when it first started, so I think the rabbis are right to speak out against it. But nowadays, that it's accepted, we fall under the rubric of the Rambam that anything that's communally accepted as a stand, unless it's obviously pritzistic, and even for nowadays, then I don't think, I think so now it's so accepted, so it's okay. And then all these proofs from the Tshuvas of whether in the times of the Gemara they had shaitels or they didn't have shaitels, I think it's pretty clear that they did not. That they're talking about, when the Gemara talks about a wig, it's talking about something that's stuffed like under her tichel to make her look as if she has more hair.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Whereas it's Peyanochris, the Mishnah Masechet Shabbos says that a woman is allowed to... go outside to a to her courtyard on Shabbos with a peyanochris, which means a false lock of hair. That means that it's under her. All the commentators say it means that it goes under her tichel.
Well, wait. So when
there were a lot of communities in Europe that women didn't cover their hair. Yeah.
At that time, or all through history.
It started, I think, in the 19th century.
Because. Oh.
Because I think people started. There was, first of all, there was some people are getting less religious. And I think there was a breakdown that people started to view manner of dress as not subject to halacha. I think that people started viewing as manner of dress as just being a stylistic thing. And we keep, when we want to, for halacha, we keep kosher, we keep Hilchos Nida, we keep Shabbos. We don't, dress is not a halachic issue. I think that's the
as
mindset
well
that people.
As that the surrounding world was dressing in a more free manner. And
correct.
So if
yeah.
we weren't. You know, in the 17th century, everybody's going to be covered. I mean, more or less.
Right. That's Rashi writes on Rashi writes in his commentary on the Gemara that in his time in France, I think this is obvious that even non-Jewish married women used to cover their hair.
But Rashi also writes in that article quoted by Rav Henkin,
yeah,
that in his world, women in the marketplace had under their arms uncovered, and I haven't been able to think of that at all, so I don't know.
Maybe,
you know,
okay.
Lower class, whatever, I don't know, it doesn't make any sense to me. Never seen anything that would suggest that.
I'm not sure.
All right.
I don't know.
Anyway.
Can I just, one case for a shaitel is if you work in like the business world, public schools, whatever, where you can't wear a hat indoors because it's just not done.
Mm-hmm.
You look like you're bored, you look like you're nervous. So people wear shaitels because they want to cover their hair.
Well,
but
you also
pass.
Difficult to work. It's not professional.
Right.
So I said, what about the Muslim women in your office? She said, yeah, they stand out. It looks weird, but she's not willing to do that. She wants
but
to.
But she's wearing a. Yeah. Well,
but if all Orthodox Jewish women wore tichels or hats or whatever, then it wouldn't be an issue anymore. It'd just be like...
We'd have more clout, like the Muslims do.
Exactly. But nowadays, the shaitel is already accepted, so there's this pressure to say, okay, so I'm not going to stand out, and of all these women who are not wearing head coverings, I'm going to wear a shaitel.
Yeah.
Which is not unreasonable, given the current climate, that's all.
Right. No, they probably figured that, you know...
That's the one halacha as regards hair covering, which is, again, the Gemara and Mishnah estate in Maseches Ksubis Daf Ayin Beis, that in the marketplace, at least in a very public area, you need either a full covering or the covering that's considered the proper dress in your time and place. So these halachas per se, again, there's a disagreement about a courtyard or something like that. We're not going to go into that right now. But these halachos of Das Yehudis, of that a woman going out with an uncovered head, certainly do not apply in a private area, in the privacy of the woman's own home, even if there are other men present besides her husband. Well, that as far as Maseches Ksubis is concerned,
okay,
that doesn't. We'll get to Maseches Brachos in a second. So that for sure, those halachos don't come into play at all when talking about a woman, woman at her home. Then we have the halacha. We have a Gemara in Maseches Brachos. The Gemara in Maseches Brachos in Daf Chaf Talad says, quotes a statement, "Tefach beisha erva," that an uncovered hand breadth of a woman's body is considered to be nakedness. And the Gemara's conclusion is, what does that mean? That means a tefach of a woman's body that is, if it's uncovered, you're not allowed to recite Kriyashma in its presence because it's going to cause you to not be able to focus completely on Kriyashma, and therefore that's considered to be an erva. Then the Gemara continues, exactly what that means is subject to a machlokas between the Rishonim.
According to the Rambam, it means a tefach in any part of the woman's body, wherever that may be, even her face or her hands. That's a simple reading of the Rambam, even though some of the other commentators don't say like that. They want to make him in line with the other Rishonim. But the accepted opinion is that of the Ravid. It's already brought in the Gaonim, I believe. It's found, it's brought in the commentary of the Rashba to the Gemara over there, that what it means when it says tefach b'isha erva means only if a place is uncovered of a place where she normally covers in her, of her body. So if midriff or her neckline is too low or sleeve, whatever it is. So that's that would, if it's a tefach too low, then you would not be allowed to recite Kriya Shema in its presence. That's the accepted opinion. Then the Gemara continues, three famous things. Shok be'isha erva, that a woman's leg is considered to be nakedness, meaning that seemingly you're not allowed to recite Kriya Shema in its presence. What does it mean exactly? Does it mean that a woman has to cover her whole leg, or does that mean that even if she uncovers it, then you're still not allowed to recite Kriya Shema because you thought it would not be subject to the rule of tefach be'isha erva? There are different opinions that are shown him about how to interpret that statement in the Gemara. Then it says, Seir, kol be'isha erva and seir be'isha erva. That a woman's voice is nakedness and a woman's hair is nakedness. So according to many Rishonim, what this is talking about is that one is not allowed to read Kriya Shema in the presence of a woman's hair or in the presence of a woman's voice. But the Rambam doesn't understand. We didn't get there yet. Oh, okay. But the way the Rambam says it, the Rambam seems to have a break in between the tefach and the shok. The Rambam doesn't even mention shok, actually. Not clear exactly why, but between the tefach and the hair and the voice. That the tefach is talking about Kriya Shema, the analysis is like Kriya Shema in the presence of a tefach of a woman uncovered, but that doesn't apply to her voice or her hair. The Rambam brings those halachos not in Hilchos Kriya Shema, but in Hilchos Isurei Bia, where he talks about separating from arayos, from the women, from impermissible relationships. And this is the way that Sefer Chinuch quotes it over here as well. He says that a man is not allowed to see the hair of an erva, and he's not allowed to hear her voice. So what does that mean? He's not allowed to see it, meaning a woman has to cover it at all times so that no man should ever, besides her husband, should ever see her hair. And again, according to the Rambam, you could imagine that this would even apply to single women, single Nida women, mm-hmm. which seems to be the minhag in the Rambam's times, that even single women covered their hair. It was the minhag in Yemen. Mm-hmm. And he says, you're not allowed to hear her voice. Again, does it mean that the woman is not allowed to talk in the presence of a man? Obviously, no. Probably what it means is that he's not allowed to specifically, like the Sefer Chinuch adds editorially over here, that he had not listened to her voice with the intention of deriving pleasure. What a man is never allowed to talk to a woman. You have all over Chazal, you have men talking to women in the Gemara. That's very difficult to understand exactly what the Rambam is getting at over here. But in any event, it's clear that the Rambam does not limit it to a singing voice. That many Rishonim say, no, it's only talking about singing voice, that's when it causes you inappropriate thoughts. But the Rambam means that a woman man is not allowed to at least listen intently, whatever he means. When he talks about the halachos of a voice, it means that he's not allowed to even hear her, to even listen to her speaking voice. How do we know this? We know this because he doesn't make any differentiation, but there's also a cute diuk that people have in one of the tshuvas of the Rambam. The Rambam is talking about a completely different topic. The Rambam is talking about listening to music after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, mm-hmm. which is somewhat of a halachic issue. So he says it's usur, and he says there are many prohibitions involved in this. And if the person who's singing is a woman and you're listening to it, so that adds an additional level of prohibition because mm-hmm. of kol, because Chazal tell us kol be'isha erva, kol sheken imhi mizameres. So all the more so does kol be'isha erva apply when she's singing. So obviously, what he holds that kol be'isha erva applies also to speaking voice, at least in a manner that's somewhat suggestive. Mm-hmm. Again, how you're not allowed to talk to women, it doesn't really make too much sense. We don't paskin like this anyway. We paskin that it's only, although the Gemara does indicate this. The Gemara says in Kiddushin that one of the Amoraim said to another one, send regards to your wife, which is a different issue that we'll discuss later. And he said, no, kol be'isha erva, I can't do that. So the answer is, even the Rishonim who say that you're not allowed to listen to a woman, that the issue is only women singing, say that this is equivalent to singing because it shows a close connection between the man and the woman. So therefore, even the speaking would be a problem. Yeah.
If it's permissible for a man to, you know, see a single woman's hair,
yeah,
right, then should it also be permissible for a man to listen to a single woman singing?
No, because it's beneath that. Same thing. Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean because of that?
Because
right.
The two of them, actually, two analogies.
You're talking in the Rambam. You're talking in the Rambam. But in the other Rishonim, that's not the case. In the Rambam, the hair issue, there's no issue of seeing at all a single woman's hair, and there's no issue about hearing a woman's voice at all unless she's singing. So the way we accept the halacha, again, we could analyze this for a long time, but the way we accept the halacha is that the normally accepted practice in the firm community is that these things apply only to a married woman's hair, and they apply only to a woman when she's singing, and a man, she has to restrain herself, that a man should never hear her singing, and that another man should never see a married woman's hair. So for this reason, that is now the accepted practice in the Jewish world, and has been for a very, very long time, that even though technically the halachos of Maseches Ksubos of the Das Yehudis issue does not apply when a woman is at home, when a woman is at home, she does cover her hair, at least with some sort of minimal type of covering, even if it's not as formal as she would go outside, when there are other men present. Again, with our chumras, we talked about last time, about a woman covering her all the time at home, but that's we're talking about strict halacha right now. And also that men do not listen to women singing under any circumstances.
So wait, so there's no evidence then before the 19th century for a widespread disregard of this?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's not?
For disregard of, that was worse. Women were going to the street with uncovered hair. That wasn't...
No, I know. So it's distinctly linked to modernity and
the
cultures of the exterior world, as opposed to anything...
Is there a difference between a group of women singing and a single, a lone woman? I mean, what about Zmiras at the Shabbos table?
Even synagogue, everyone singing with the Jabbat, with the Kehillah.
That's for sure. That's
Rebbetzin for sure. Blau, Dr. Rivka Blau, writes in her biography of her father, and not only does she write it, when I was there for Shabbos, she practiced this and explained it accordingly, was that in her father's house, and her grandfather, also Rabbi Prail, that was the previous Elizabeth Arav before her father. So she says that in Lithuanian communities, before the ultra-right-wing Hungarians, you know, took over the mentality, halachic mentality in America... I'm of Hungarian extraction, but so I can be a little self-deprecating. So, she said that they didn't consider it a problem to sing Shabbos Zmiros together, the whole family, men and women. The men weren't really listening to the women. It was just the holy songs. It wasn't in any manner of attracting any type of sexual singing, and they considered that to be permissible. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, whether this was tied into modernity also... I don't know, but...
Achronim would say that too, right? At least one.
The Sri Deish you're talking about. The Sri Deish has a tshuva,
like,
right?
Yeah, but that was very much, you know, like... But yeah,
right, he writes a tshuva to B'nai Akiva, where he says if you shut the girls up from singing Shabbos songs, this is right after the Holocaust, they needed to build their spiritual thing. He says we can rely on all these heterim, and you don't have to shut the girls up. They can sing...
want to sing Shabbos songs.
Right, but Rebbetzin Blau says that in her family, the tradition was they'd be even more lenient. They were not lightweights. So, okay.
Yeah.
That's
so what about opera and song?
Yeah, I heard stories that certain, you know, rabbis from the Tkufa were familiar with in Berlin when they were very serious learned rabbis who were studying in university in Berlin, that they used to go to opera. It's a little hard to justify that. I mean, my more cynical self wants to say, come on, nobody's going to get turned on from opera. But then it gets a very fuzzy line. What exactly singing is allowed and what's not allowed. We normally assume that men should not be listening to women singing at all. But again, these we'll discuss a little more in a few minutes if you know, next time, that if you know in yourself that there are certain small leniencies, not big, for mitzvah purposes, he says that if you know yourself that you're not going to get aroused, if you do sort of things that are normally considered to be usher, so then it's allowed. So they took that maybe a little farther, that they thought opera was not arousing at all. It was just, they were just focusing on the story that did not fall under Kol B'Sherev. It's a chiddush,
It's a chiddush. I'm not gonna lie, but it's. I mean, you're right. There is a difference, but there's also a difference. By the way, speaking of Debbie Friedman, listening to a recording, the Rav Avadia Yosef has a tshuva where he says that if you don't know what the singer looks like, then you're allowed to listen to her.
Oh.
Or later, he says even if you haven't ever seen her in person, mm-hmm. you're allowed to listen to the tape. Apparently, I listened to her on recording. I don't know. But she said, apparently, this is also quoted as famously one of the Brisker Rav's kulas. This is very rare to get a kula from the Brisker Rav, where he says...
Like the Brisker Rav, mean the Yerushalmi Brisker Rav.
Yeah, yeah. If he's allowed to say, if you're allowed to listen to a woman singing on the radio, he answered, Ein ze kol isha ela kol radio. This is not the woman's voice, rather a radio's voice.
Well, that goes on, then you can't be yotzei on Havdalah over the top.
That's also a big shaila, and that's really, yeah, you certainly should not. You certainly should not be yotzei Havdalah over the telephone. Again, if there's nothing, if there's no other way for you to hear Havdalah possible, then it's better than nothing, I suppose, but you really definitely, there's any other way. That's right. So the question is, now that, as was mentioned before, we have many poskim, including the Aruch HaShulchan, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Avadia Yosef, many, many heavy-hitting poskim, which some people like to downplay nowadays, like to adhere to the stringent opinions, but really, it's very reasonable that they write that even though it's usur nowadays, for them to do it, nowadays women are allowed to say Kriyat Shema, etc., in front of the hair of a woman that is a married woman that's uncovered, because since single women are allowed to do it, so you see a hair is not intrinsically erotic.
Ah.
And since they're not used to all married women covering their hair, they're used to seeing married women uncovering, it's not going to, so mm-hmm. it's become, and nowadays it's not going to cause improper thoughts, and you're allowed to recite Kriyat Shema in front of this. Other people are still stringent. The Mishnah Berurah says that since halachically they have to cover, so there's nothing doing, and you're still not allowed to recite Kriyat Shema in front of a woman with uncovered hair. Now, there's now only a small step from that to... saying, well, if that's the case, that's not going to cause women, nowadays it's not going to cause men to have improper thoughts. So, yes, we still have to adhere to the Deoraisa rule and the minhag of Jewish women that the woman doesn't go publicly bareheaded, chas v'shalom, we don't do that. But in the privacy of my home, another man knocks on the door and I open the door, why should I have to put on a tichel? He's not going to get turned on. It's in privacy of my own home. There's the only thing that comes into play is maseches brachos, not maseches ksubos. But this is very much not the accepted practice. We assume that the traditional practice of Jewish women, married women, is to always have their
you want
right. That's certainly recommended that a woman should definitely cover her hair in the privacy of her home when there are men around who are not her husband. There are women, there are chashuva women who actually did do this in practice, that they don't cover their hair at home, but they do outside the house. One example is, famously, Rebbetzin Lichtenstein. Oh. Rebbe Aaron Lichtenstein's almana now. She does not cover her hair when there were students coming over for Shabbos meals and stuff. But she always did cover hair, even though her mother didn't. Okay, different story. Different, but she did always cover hair when going outside, or when she's in any sort of public type of setting. It's not crazy, but again, it's certainly not the recommended. No, it's pretty rare in the current generation. There are some people who do it. So, anyway, so in terms of all people, also in shul, people singing together, that would be under the same thing as Rebbetzin Blau writes, that since it's all holy songs, nobody's going to get turned on.
Also, it's a mixture. You can't hear a single
that's
voice.
That's the point.
That's maybe.
It's a question of kol isha, okay? Kol nashim should be, it's not a, you can't.
It's still, if it's all women singing together, so it's still going to be the same. It's still going to be a womanly voice that's emanating. If they're men and women singing together, talked about, that there's a heter b'shas adchak, that since you can't hear just a single woman, that's not really to be relied upon, according to most poskim, yeah? So it's not crazy for us to all sing together in shul, as long as the women are not trying to belt it out to try to get, that would be obviously priestess, like to try to get people to listen to them. That's the definition of priestess, to try to get, for a man or a woman, to try to, do something to try to bedavka attract attention in that manner is certainly not appropriate.
On the other hand, you say, well,
yes, you're right. That's why we have to, even though there's a limit to the desensitization argument, there's a difference between singing, and you have to. Yeah. That's why we have to guard our eyes. We have to try not to look at these things as much as possible.
You're not supposed to, walk behind a woman in the street or something like that.
Right.
It's kind of unavoidable in New York City.
You're right. It's unavoidable. You're right.